listening to Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live, a podcast exclusively for high school sports in Arkansas. Here are your hosts, Nate Olson and Kyle Sutherland.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us on episode 116, I believe this is, of Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by SB Live, alongside the softball guru himself, Jared Hawthorne. My name is Kyle Sutherland, and as we probably expected would happen again in the month of March, it's going to happen in April too, I'm sure, but winter weather, once again, stop me if you've heard me say this before, completely wreaked havoc across the state. We're supposed to have a lot of great tournaments. That's one of the things that mid-March is known for, the DMAC tournament, the what is now the Blazer Blast that was the Bearcat Blast over the last few years. Now the Farmington tournament, Harrison tournament. Really about the only ones that didn't get rained out, Jared, was the Harrison tournament that Bentonville beat Cabot to take that crown. That was a rematch of the 2022 state finals game, of course, that Bentonville won 3-1, a really good match up there in Benton. And then, of course, you had the Farmington tournament that Farmington had an incredible comeback over former coach Randy Osnes in Springdale Harbor, scoring 7 runs in the bottom of the 5th inning to win 8-6 and take the Farmington tournament. But it was really just a frustrating weekend for about the rest of the state, to say the least. I really feel bad for those down that worked so hard at the DMAC tournament. Of course, our friend Karen Sanders that puts the Blazer Blast together. It was really tough. We still got to get some good games in those tournaments, talking about the DMAC and the Blazer Blast, but overall, just a really tough weekend for some, regardless of whether it was teams or the coordinators that were putting things together.
Oh, definitely. There was a lot of rain fell, you know, over a couple of days there just prior to the tournaments. And there was a lot of pitchers I saw of fields that had 4 and 6 inches of water standing on the day they were supposed to start playing on Friday. And so it definitely limited the field choices. We missed a lot of good softball games that would have happened this weekend. And even last week, there was 2 or 3 days of regular season games that got, you know, conference games also that got rained out, you know, Wednesday night, Thursday and Friday, there were some good games that the weather got to. So hopefully we can, right after spring break, get back to some good weather and get some good softball going again.
Yeah, like you said, on Thursday, and I know Friday, definitely, that was some that got canceled. Really, though, that was the last 2 days of the week. But one that I know really many had their eye on and wanted to see was a possible matchup in the Blazer Blast between Riverside and Magnet Cove, which would have been, of course, number one versus number two, defending state champion Riverside against Magnet Cove, that, as we've talked about, has a really loaded team this year. So you really hate that you didn't get to see that one. But I'll tell you, too, especially the way that Taylor has looked. Again, and Taylor's always good, as we've talked about so many different times, but you know, they beat 6A Conway. They beat 5A BB. I know neither one of those teams is ranked right now, but both are – I know we haven't done the outside looking in yet. Those two additional teams are coming after this spring break, so we'll have that on next week's Super 7. But still, nonetheless, regardless of whether it's Conway and BB or whoever, a 1A against a 5 or 6A is impressive in its own right. So you would have loved to see a Greenwood-Taylor matchup, which you would have had rain not taken that out. You know, Greenwood, they might not be quite what we thought. I think we had them at number 3 in the preseason rankings. Right now, got them on the kind of the back end, but I still like, especially what they've got in the circle, just got to consistently put up more runs. But I really think that game between Taylor and Greenwood, Magnet Cove and Riverside, up there in NEA or two that we really missed out on that come off the top of my head.
Yeah, definitely. I would have loved to have seen those matchups. Talking about Greenwood, I noticed a couple of scores where they ended up playing Gurdon twice in the DMAC, and Gurdon played very competitively with them. You know, we haven't talked a lot about Gurdon and Beth Jackson's team down there, but I'm going to tell you, I've been very impressed with them this year, even though they're a young team. They're really coming along, and Greenwood beat them a couple times, but Gurdon was competitive. I would love to see that game between Taylor and Greenwood if it had happened. I think that would have been a really good ball game.
And like I said, in the Harrison tournament, that was Bentonville and Cabot in the finals. No surprise there. You know, those were definitely two, I would say, the most powerful teams. That's one that Warsaw, Missouri, I don't have that bracket in front of me. I know Warsaw, Missouri is one that plays in it. I believe Dover might have been one. Bentonville played Melbourne the night before on Friday. That was just a non-conference game, but Bentonville does get the victory over Cabot in that one. And I believe that's actually, if I'm not mistaken, that was Cabot's first loss on the, yeah, Cabot is now 10-1. So that was the Lady Panthers' first loss on the season. And, you know, Bentonville, Jared, we talked about it. You know, yes, they're not the Bentonville of old. I want to say this real quick before we go into the Farmington tournament. Bentonville, they might not be the one of old. Look, they had two returning starters. They had eight sign with colleges. What was it, three or so? Three or four were Division Ones at least. And they've got right now between freshmen and sophomores, they're starting seven combined, plus lost their projected starter at shortstop. So really just having to adjust. I mean, Ken Early will tell you that's part of the game. He's been at Bentonville for almost 20 years, but they've kind of gotten on a little bit of a hot streak. They're 6-3. I believe that's what, three or four in a row for them. So coming off a really good week, that gained some confidence beating a really good Cabot team.
For sure. I was expecting a really tight game between Cabot and them, but I'm gonna be honest, I was expecting a Cabot victory in a close game there. And Bentonville showed me a little more, I think, in that game than what I thought I had been seeing from them early in the season. So they may be starting to put it together for sure. Cabot's loaded. You look at Cabot's lineup and the talent they have, and obviously Bentonville is always loaded and got a lot of talent, but looking at those two, I was expecting a real tight game with a Cabot victory, and Bentonville showed me a little something there. So definitely going to be keeping an eye on them. They may be turning that corner for the rest of the season.
And considering that the Farmington tournament was the only other one that got to play its full slate of games, and I was able to go up there, that's the one that I have, of course, the most information on. We're going to go a good bit in depth about that. It was a really fun weekend. You know, Jared, I'd talked to you. I think I said it on the preview pod that I was going to make a point to go out to more games this year, just to really just to have something to do, you know, on a weeknight, and also to kind of get some pictures for the gallery, get to see some teams with my own two eyes, as opposed to only on Game Changer or which don't nothing wrong with Game Changer or some of the many great outlets that do streaming. But it's just better, of course, you know, when you get your eyes on it and kind of see everything in person. So that's why I looked at this slate and I'm like, okay. We got six of, well, there was eight teams. One of them was Farmington's junior varsity team, but six of the seven varsity teams that we had in that tournament were ranked in the Super 7 ranking. So we knew that it was going to be a really good slate. There were some lopsided games, and there were some, I think that there were certainly teams that exposed others. I think you look at that Harbor, really, especially that third place game with, or I'm sorry, it was the semifinal matchup with Harbor and Gravett. And Gravett made some mistakes. Coach Luther, she made a coaching mistake in that, and she owned up to it. I admired her for that. And of course, Bentonville West, they had a really tough weekend after they had a comeback victory over Hackett. So we'll kind of go in depth a little bit more into these, but just kind of the things that you and I had talked about and the things that you had seen from the scores and all the box scores and whatnot. What was your take on the Farmington tournament over the weekend?
It kind of ran the way that I expected it to some degree. I knew Farmington, especially once they got their girls back, they were going to be really tough. You know, they had several girls that were just coming out of basketball, and I figured it was going to take them, you know, 2 to 4 games to kind of get back in the groove of softball, and they got back at a good time because they made a pretty good little run there in the tournament. Definitely a ton of talented teams in there. You know, Harbert, Hackett, and Gravett, you know, everywhere you look, Bentonville West, just talented teams. I don't know, when you look at all those teams, they're all in the top, you know, basically in the top five or so of their classification. So that was a truly loaded tournament. I kind of thought if Farmington found their groove with their basketball girls back, that they had a chance to win that one, and that's the way it worked out. But definitely, I was impressed with the amount of good quality teams in that tournament for no bigger tournament than it was.
Yeah, that was the most impressive part. And I talked to Coach Shirey about this, and I'll probably mention this throughout the episode, but you can check out the Farmington recap. I wrote one on that, and with the top performers, some videos from coaches, of course, plenty of quotes from coaches, just kind of some of the main storylines from it. But I talked with Coach Shirey, and that was really what was the most, I guess you could say, shocking, just considering the fact that this was the first time that Farmington had played together when they with their full team. As you said, look, they only had Reese Shirey and Morgan Ure, and again, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. Forgive me if I didn't, but they were the only ones that played basketball. But you think about how big those two pieces are. I mean, Morgan hit one of the three-run home runs in the fifth inning that got him within two runs before Mallory Sills hit that last one that ended up essentially being the walk-off because the time limit went out, and that was the last. After that, the game was over. So, I mean, that's what's most impressive. They certainly had their mistakes. There was no doubt about it. They made their – I think they had five errors, but there were thousands. I mean, I say this obviously – very much exaggerating. There were thousands of errors over the weekend. It's going to happen during, especially when good teams are playing each other in the early season. But I think that's what's the most impressive part about it, Jared, is, you know, they're not just playing with their first full team with the two key starters back in Shirey and Morgan Ure, but also too the fact that these were really quality teams. We're talking about a Harbor team, like you said, that has been in the top five of its class pretty much all season, and also too what was it against Bentonville West, another 6A school. So you take down two 6A schools and then you win your own tournament.
I was looking at that earlier on before the tournament, and I was looking at teams that I thought had a chance in it. And I was like, man, well, that team has a chance. Oh, wait, that team has a chance. That team has a chance. And I thought, like I said earlier, that I thought if Farmington could kind of put it together, they would maybe be my favorite out of it. But I was really high on Springdale Harbor. I was really high on Hackett. And without a doubt, was high on Gravett. So I was kind of putting those as my four that I thought had the best chance of winning that one. And, of course, Farmington ended up, you know, winning their own, but it always helps when you got a little bit of a home field advantage too. A little bit of a, you know, your own tournament kind of thing.
No doubt. And I think probably the biggest thing with this that was just kind of, I was laughing about in the press box was the story almost wrote itself because you had Randy, I don't know if you and I have even talked about this, but you had Randy Austin that coached at Farmington for 25 years. And Shirey was on his staff in the early 2000s. Austin retires in 2021. Shirey comes back from Fayetteville. And so Austin comes back into coaching. This is his first year. He comes back to the field that is named after him, up 6-1 in the fifth inning. It's looking like he's going to win the tournament, a tournament that he and Coach Shirey helped start, or actually did start together. And then Farmington does that. I mean, it really couldn't – I would say that this was easily the best game. I mean, it was not just the best game because it was the championship game. There was probably two or three that really just kept you on the edge of your seat. Obviously, when you put up seven runs in an inning, now if you're on the opposing side of that, it's not good at all. And that was one thing Coach Shirey had mentioned, was that he felt for Coach Austin because he knows what it's like to be on that side of it as well. So obviously a lot of respect between these two. And then you also have Coach Samantha Luther at Gravett, who played for Coach Austin, graduated in 2010. And you know, Coach Austin won three state championships with this team. So definitely one of the legends in softball and great storylines involved in that. But speaking of Gravett, you know, talking about them first, I know obviously we've mentioned them plenty of times with them being the top ranked team, but Brooke Handel, I'll tell you what, Jared, that kid can't catch a break. You know, she had the issue with the jaw last year, and then she broke her nose in basketball, so she's got a face cover for that. Still had a pretty quality weekend. And Gravett had a big game, big offensive game in particular against Bentonville West in that win. Really just had to tweak the lineup. They put Lainey Chilton, who's typically, you know, a middle infielder. They had her behind the disc catching. And they also, Sydney Kildow can't pitch right now. She's playing third. So they've got Mira Russell, a freshman that actually did a really good job coming in there. That's kind of was in and out with Brooke Handel. So Gravitz had to kind of toy with the lineup a little bit. And I think that was, I mean, not to take anything away from Harbor whatsoever, but I think that was definitely something that played a part, you know, in that loss along with some key mistakes. But to me, just kind of from some things that I saw, I think that that's going to benefit Gravitt with what they have right now. You know, they're hopefully getting these injuries out of the way early, and you've got a quality freshman pitcher in there to go along with a Brooke Handel that pitched in the state championship game along with Sydney Kildow once she gets healthy.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was you or someone else I was talking to a few days back, maybe a week or so ago, talking about Gravitt and all the injuries they've had. I brought it up to someone then that we may see when they do get healthy a really tough Gravitt team. They're already playing really good ball, even with all the injuries they have right now. But it's just building more depth for them. And when they get those players back, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, and they go to make that stretch for the state playoffs, it's going to probably have more depth and more ability. And I see it as a benefit, even though there's having to deal with it. They're overcoming it pretty well right now. They're definitely going to be strong as they go down the stretch if they get those players back.
And another team that was in this tournament that has dealt with some very key injuries is Lincoln. Of course, you know, I think everybody knows by now that Brinkley Morton, the junior Mississippi State commit, she injured her hip at the Chelsea Riley Colburn tournament in Russellville, not this past weekend, but the one before. And it was definitely bothering. She pitched the entire – you got to give her credit. She pitched and pitched pretty well for the most part in the one-run loss to Gravitt. But it was certainly obvious that she was in some pain and didn't pitch at all in the next game. I think that was – see, that was a loss to – I guess that would have been – I guess it would have been. No, so they lost to Gravitt, so then they played in the game, and then they shut out. I believe it was Prairie Grove 5-0. She didn't pitch in that game, and then she pitched two innings in the loss to Hackett. I'm sitting here trying to go off memory, and I've got this thing right in front of me. I didn't even remember that. But so she pitched nine innings over the weekend. But the good thing is, as opposed to last year when Lincoln went out of town for spring break to play, they're resting this week. They've got a doubleheader the Monday after spring break against Bergman in 3A1 conference play. So that is definitely something to watch. You know, Brinkley, again, you know, she's a tough kid. I think that, you know, she did as well as she could have done, and her team did as well as they could have done behind her, especially considering that she's not the only injury that they have, and they played a very loaded field with much higher classifications against some teams. But anytime, it doesn't matter, you know, what team you are, whether you have talent at every position, anytime you lose somebody of her caliber, it's going to be definitely glaring considering all that she brings both with her bat and in the circle.
Well, for sure. Brink is a super tough kid. I mean, she really is. And I have spoken to a couple people about her injury and got a little more info on it. And with the injury that she has, I was surprised that she was able to pitch what she was. You know, that's just gutting through it and trying to help your team is what that is. But she definitely... I think with a little rest, she's going to be, you know, all right for the long haul. She's probably needs a week, 10 days to really get back right. But when she's able to go again, you may see Lincoln start looking like a different team too, when she's able to go full tilt and they're back to full strength. And they've had a couple other little bumps and bruises and things that have affected them with some of their other players besides just Brink getting beat up a little bit this year. And so they get them all back healthy, you know, week, 10 days from now. I think we're going to see Lincoln really start looking strong down the stretch as they go forward. And now I think she's going to be, you know, Brinkley Morton that we're used to seeing when she's fully healthy. She's going to be, you know, smashing bombs and striking people out. So you're not going to hold a kid like that down for very long.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that that's definitely spot on. And that was what I had asked Brett right after their head coach, Brett Engel, after the game. I was talking after the Gravitt game, and I was one of the first ones I asked because I didn't see anything on their schedule, but sometimes these spring break out of state tournaments don't show up because teams might not have an account with us. So I'd asked, are y'all going out of town again? She said, no, we're definitely staying home and resting. So that's going to benefit them. There are quite a few teams that are currently in Gulf Coast or Gulf Shores in the Gulf Coast Classic right now. I thought that I had it bookmarked, but I'm looking at some of the teams right now in the brackets, or I was trying to look at them. I know, Jared, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but I think like West Memphis is there. I know Greene County Tech, they always go. Southside B Branch is another one that's there, an undefeated team from Class 2A. We've actually got I really did think that I bookmarked this, but I guess I didn't, and now I'm really kicking myself. But I know that I at least saw upwards of two to three handfuls of teams that we have represent. Carlisle's another one that's going out there.
Carlisle's, Greene County Tech, and I've heard Batesville, Southside.
Yes.
I had not heard about West Memphis. That's one I hadn't heard. So those are the four that I can think of off the top of my head. And there's probably three or four more for sure.
Yeah, and then Rogers Heritage, I know that I saw a game this morning. But if you just type in Gulf Coast Classic 2024 softball, because I'm pretty sure they have a baseball one as well, you can check out all that, and then you can look at that and maybe follow some of the scores of the teams. I'm going to try to tweet some out this week. Here we are recording on a Monday. I'm at about my 13th, and Jared, I know you probably had a hard day as well, but I'm at my 13th and about a half hour of the day, so I am pretty much running on fumes. So I guess this is a good week that we don't have much going on. Of course, you know, we're going to get back into the full slate next week. But really, I'm trying to think. I know on the last show, we went through some career milestones. We try to do that whenever somebody hits, you know, a career milestone for strikeouts or home runs, perfect games, whatever. I know Brinkley Morton, speaking of her, we didn't get, I want to say it was posted maybe after we recorded, but she did surpass 600 career strikeouts in the Chelsea Riley Colburn tournament there in Russellville. So just a little over 2 years into her varsity career, she's already at 600 strikeouts. Not really shocking there. What's Jaylee at right now? So she's 2.5 years in. What's she at around?
Jaylee's at 467.
I know she was flirting with 500. Yeah. So yeah,
she's getting close to 500. And if we can keep her healthy and rolling, she should probably at least hit 500 and maybe get close to 6 this year.
And then Lexi Franklin, I know, recently surpassed 800. I'm telling you, 1,000 seems crazy, but it's not doable with her.
Lexi Franklin is a special talent. She really is. She's just one of those kids that makes you miss. I've watched her once in person and about 7 or 8 times on Game Changer now. And she is just really good at making bats miss the ball. She's got a special talent for sure. I've been very impressed with her. Obviously, Brinkley putting up 600 already early in her junior year. And, you know, considering she really hasn't pitched nearly as much this year because of being a little bit banged up like she normally does, you know, she's been very impressive. And I know Ayla Buford and Abby Copine reached milestones of like 300 in the last week. I'm trying to think. There's a couple other big ones that I had some written down. And
yeah, I try to bookmark them when I see them on Twitter and like save them on Facebook. But man, last week, especially with me going out of town, that I was just, I haven't had a chance to go back and look through them. But we try to definitely, I want anybody listening, if you know of any career milestones, you know, throughout the week, you know, send them to Jared, send them to me. My email it's as simple as it can be, Kyle@scorebooklive.com. We want to try to give as many of these shout outs as we can because we know, you know, how hard, you know, these girls work to do this. So we want to try to get that as much recognition as we can. I do, speaking of pitchers, I want to point out two freshman pitchers that I forgot to mention. So I was talking to you on the phone on Saturday about Sierra Dots from Springdale Harbor. Now, she's got a really good bat, too, but she's actually pitching a lot. So it's either her or Aniston Wright. Aniston, what we thought was Reith, what we've pronounced the whole time like that from Harbor, the pitcher that's now committed to South Alabama. I learned this weekend that her last name is pronounced Wright, like R-I-G-H-T. So that was that. I did not see that coming whatsoever. So I was glad to learn that. So basically, if Aniston is not pitching, she's at first, and vice versa with Sierra. But Sierra Dots was very impressive this week. I thought that she had a, you know, she gave up some typical things that freshmen give up. But I thought she looked pretty good against Gravett. She had a really good weekend at the plate. I know in two games she was like a combined 4 for 7 or so. So really good there. But also Morgan Reeves, who started the freshman for Farmington that started in the finals. She, again, made some typical freshman mistakes, but I was really impressed with just the confidence that she showed. She got, I know, in at least one bases loaded situation with C. Palmer, the leadoff batter for Harbor coming up. And there was a couple of those where she got some on, and I just didn't see her rattled. So I think those are two freshman pitchers to watch. You know, I got to see a little bit more of Sierra Dotson. She's got a little bit bigger picture of body of work, of course. But Morgan Reeves from Farmington, Sierra Dotson from Harbor, two freshmen to watch this year.
I want to – those two for sure. I'm learning, and I'll freely admit, I am the least familiar with Northwest Arkansas teams, and I'm trying to learn them, and I've been following more of them on Game Changer and really trying to look at names and stats and get better in that area. But I've seen really good stats out of both of those. Glad to know that the correct way to pronounce Wright rather than Reese. But definitely, they both look very strong. And I want to give a quick little shout-out to a pitcher that I don't know personally at all, but I've been seeing a lot of things out of her, and that's a freshman pitcher at Poen named, I believe it's Jaden Warwick.
Yes.
Maybe if I didn't get that right. That kid has thrown a ton of pitches over the so far this year, and she threw either three or four games this weekend down at the DMAC. And that's got to be the most rubber arm kid I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, Poen's got a couple of. Yeah. I think Poen's got a really good catcher, too. Yeah. Because I'm going to have to touch base with Blue. I've heard that they've got a couple of good freshmen. Because, yeah, it's like a catcher and a couple other really talented players.
Yeah. Poen is definitely much improved this year and looking strong. And Bigelow is looking really good this year. So that's some teams that you know, they've been decent teams over the past few years, but this year they look much improved. I feel like, I'm gonna be honest with you, that all of those teams in that conference, you know, Magnet Cove is a powerhouse, Cutter Morning Star is gonna be strong, Bigelow's gonna be strong, Poen's gonna be strong, CAC's gonna be good. I mean, there's gonna be some absolute just battles in that conference this year. But what I've seen off of, you know, stats and things and what I've heard from some people, the freshman pitcher at Poen is definitely a freshman to keep an eye on in the circle.
Yeah, I've been hearing that. I know that that's been a name that's kind of been brought up between you and I here and there really since the season began. So, yeah, that's you love to see those freshmen stepping up early because, I mean, man, when they step up that early like that and they're throwing those kind of innings, man, they're going to probably have record-setting careers assuming they stay healthy. So, always love to see them get started early, but – well, I think that's pretty much going to do it. I mean, there's stuff that we could talk about, but to be honest with you, I mean, really last week, I'm trying to think of some of the bigger games I'm going through here. I know that there's probably at least some gaming. I'll tell you, the one of the surprising ones that I think I'm going to be really watching this coming up after spring break. So in 5A, I'm not shocked that Van Buren has had some struggles just because, again, when you lose, talking about pitching and talking about long tenured pitchers, when you lose someone of Ember Caldwell's, I've talked about her grit, her talent, just her consistency, you're probably going to take a step back. That's just the reality of it. Now, I did not see, even though Greenbrier is a good team, we've got them ranked high. They are probably, it seems like they're getting back to what they were a few years ago, back to the Kylie Griffin days and all that, when they had won around that, when they had won a state championship. But I mean, I did not see that coming. You know, two big time lopsided losses in a doubleheader. I'm not going to give up on Van Buren just yet. I think that they still, you know, they can rebound and maybe not. This is not going to be a third consecutive 5A West state conference championship. But to me, you know, when you think about Greenwood in there, they could probably take that next step up. You know, I know Greenbrier is definitely, you know, up there with them as well, and they're proving that. But I didn't quite see. I'm not shocked that Greenbrier won. I think it's just one of those where I'm shocked in both games in the way that they won.
Yeah. Well, Van Buren's definitely still very talented, and, you know, Ashlyn Michael can absolutely smash the ball, and there's some good hitters in that group. They definitely are going to have a little bit of a, I guess I would say, a relearning how to play the game without what they had in the circle. But they're still going to be a good team. Greenwood is definitely, I think, coming on stronger and stronger. Greenbrier looks good. You know, I'll tell you, the conference that's really catching my eye, and we've talked a lot about it, but when you start looking at the conference with Benton, Sheridan, Arkansas High, Whitehall, Lake Hamilton, I'm gonna tell you what, I like Sheridan, honestly, right now in that conference. I think Benton is still a powerhouse right there with them. But look at what Arkansas High has put together here lately. And they just won their bracket in the DMAC, went 4-0 and just hammered people. Arkansas High is quickly becoming a very powerful team in a powerful conference. And they put up a really good victory this last week against Whitehall, against a really talented Bethany Roper at Whitehall, great pitcher. And Arkansas High won that game 12-3. Definitely, if Arkansas High can keep their best players healthy, they have a chance to really make some noise this year.
You know, I like what you said about the South, and we talked about the depth of that, and I think that it's definitely turning out to be exactly what we expected. Class 4A, pretty much about what we expected there. I mean, you look at the very top. Well, I think we nailed that with Gravette, and you could probably put them in different orders: Gravette, Pea Ridge, Farmington. If you're talking about strictly pitching, I think probably Pea Ridge is the number one team. If you're talking about defending champion and just maybe as far as from top to bottom, the most loaded, you're probably talking about Gravette or Farmington. I mean, I think Pea Ridge is probably in that mix as well. But then I really like Bauxite. I like what they have. Malvern, they've still got some stuff to prove, but nonetheless, in four conference games coming into spring break, they have run ruled all of those games. Can't forget about Monticello. Monticello, they're 10-0, their second straight 10-0 start. We've talked at length about them. That seventh spot was a little bit hard. It wasn't really hard because Nashville had the head-to-head, but really Star City Nashville can battle for that 7-8 spot. Now, again, Nashville, they've got the 6-1 head-to-head win, so I mean it makes sense to put them right there when it really comes down to it. But I think 4A is probably, you know, about where right where we expected, especially the top three. But really, other than
And
that, or go ahead.
then you always have like a dark horse Mina that
Yeah.
can on any given day beat anybody in the state, you
That's
know.
right. If
So
Mina gets the bats consistently going, they're going to be scary, I think. If they get the bats,
they're
and that's
that
something
team
we've said over the past couple of years.
that likes to hang out in that 7-10 range, and they'll lose a game here or there they shouldn't, but then they'll turn around and they'll beat somebody that you never expected them to. So they just like to play in that smaller dark horse spot.
Yeah, and then like 3A, even though that's, I mean, that the teams that are in there right now, I think you could also look at DeWitt. I think there's plenty of others you could look at. Class 2A, Mount Vernon and NOLA, what are they going to do? They got a big one with Quitman. Quitman's probably, and we've talked about them being such a bipolar team. Quitman is 5-4 right now. I think they've got a really good strength of schedule. You know, the really what pushed them back in was, I mean, they had that 2-0 win over Woodlawn, and Lily Fay pitched a really, really good game. I think it was like 13 strikeouts that she had. But that win over Woodlawn, and then the big one over against Mount Vernon and NOLA. I think that that's going to be, they've got Mount Vernon and NOLA on, I think it's March 26th. Yeah, the Tuesday after spring break. So that is going to tell a lot, really, for both of those teams. But I mean, overall, just like when you look at it from 1 to 6A, to me, it's not overly shocking. I know I'm kind of throwing a few things at you here, but like, it's just not overly shocking to me. Just kind of what we've said, what we know, or I guess what we think we know up to spring break. But Class 5A is maybe the most, like, that's probably the most one that I'm looking at. Like, okay, what's going to happen? Because Greene County Tech, they had that lopsided loss to Nettleton, but they play a lot of really good competition this week in the Gulf Coast Classic. Then you've got Maumelle, who expected them to be at number four. Sylvan Hills, I really like them. I want to see them against better competition. But I think the 5A, yeah, like you said, Sheridan, Benton, probably there at the top, the favorites, and that's why we've got them at 1 and 2. But I feel like there's so much, just it's just wide open for the most part from there.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Across a lot of different classifications, 5A especially, but you know, last year we talked over and over about how crazy 3A was and how deep 3A was. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. This year, 2 through 5A are all almost like 3A was last year. 2A is really deep this year, deeper than I've ever seen 2A. 3A is just like they were last year, really deep. 4A is deeper than I've seen it in a long time. And 5A is deeper than I've seen it in a long time. Like, softball in Arkansas is just getting better. And there's, you know, people don't realize, but the travel side of it has driven better softball in Arkansas, and now it's translating over into this high school side where we're getting to see it on the high school and in the teams. But there's so many more kids playing a higher level of travel ball now and getting to play in showcase tournaments and getting to play the best competition out there. And when we see those kids go back to their high schools and spread out across the state, man, we're starting to see depth in the high school like we've never seen before. And yes, there's still very weak teams that don't have pitching and different things. And there's still really powerful teams that have big schools that have, a lot of talent. But the overall depth of softball in Arkansas has improved so much over the last 3 to 4 years.
Oh yeah, there's no question. And speaking of improving, I say hopefully it's going to happen. It's only a matter of time. It's going to happen probably by the end of the month or in early April. But we'll start figuring out more so like as we get into conference play, as teams get healthy again, or at least more healthy. You would think that with all the ones that are going to be sitting, or not sitting, but at least more so resting and getting a few hitting practices in, fielding a few ground balls, that's going to help. Get healthy with these teams that are really just kind of got a few nicks and knacks. So, you've got those unfortunate ones that are out for the season, which you always hate to see, but overall it's good to kind of just unwind for a little bit. I've heard a few kids say over the weekend that they were going on vacation, they weren't going to take a glove with them, or really just we're going to kind of try to focus on just being a kid this week. And I think that's something that we forget about to really just sit back and relax. So I hope you all do that are listening have a very healthy and happy, safe spring break. Jared, I think that's going to do it for me. If you got anything else.
No, I think you've made a lot of good points, and I think we're going to see a lot coming out, this week after spring break. We're going to see a lot of good conference games, and you're going to see either one of two things. The teams that are getting healthy coming back from the rest, you're going to see them get strong, or a lot of times that first week back, we see a lot of fresh injuries when they get into conference, and the teams that can survive or not survive those next round of injuries. So the injury bug is always a big question mark for everybody. So,
Yep.
but I'm looking forward to a good week of the first heavy part of conference this right here after spring break.
Yeah, that's right. And like I said, you can check for those interested in checking the recap of the Farmington tournament, you can look at that on the website. By the time this drops, I imagine that should be, actually, I know it will be. And also, too, if you have any baseball, I said on the baseball podcast that if you have any. If you have any sisters or daughters playing softball or even girlfriends playing softball and they want to listen to this, awesome. But also, too, on the flip side, and you're a baseball fan, you want to check out the podcast, we've got that as well. We've split them up. I guess everybody has figured out by now in two different episodes this year just to kind of keep everything separate and to make it easier on the listener. And then, of course, Kevin will have his notebook that should be published on Thursday as well, talking about some of the state tournaments, or some, I keep saying state tournaments. That just automatically it's like in front of it every time I say tournament. But some of the spring break tournaments that are going on throughout this week. So check out scorebooklive.com/Arkansas for all of the baseball and softball content that we release on a weekly basis. Other than that will do it for episode 116 of Arkansas Prep Extra. For Jared Hawthorne and all of us here at SB Live, my name is Kyle Sutherland. We will catch you next week.